In the 1930s and 40s, comedians Danny Kaye, Red Buttons, and Milton Berle got their start performing in the resorts around New York's Catskill Mountains. But back then, they were still David Daniel Kaminsky, Aaron Schwartz, and Milton Berlinger. They traveled a circuit of Jewish hotels that was known as the Borscht Belt. These hotels offered more than respite from the summer heat. Once there, city dwellers spent the time in between meals being constantly entertained by the social director, or as he was better known, the Tummler. In the new book, A Summer World, Stephen Canford traces the history of the Catskill resorts, beginning in 1773 with the arrival of the man known as Jacob the Jew, up to the present. Canford grew up in New York City. I asked him if he ever went to the Catskills as a kid.
I never did, no. I was forbidden the Catskills as a child because—
You were forbidden?
Yes, it was too frivolous in my family. We were a family of Romanian socialists, and you spent the summers taking care of the poor or founding Zionist states or whatever. You certainly didn't fool around in the Catskills with all those tumblers. And, of course, as a result, I became very curious. I was also forbidden comic books as a child, and as a result, I'm one of the walking experts in comic books. So it really is a case of curiosity of the forbidden.
If you were at one of the high-end resort hotels in the Catskills in the glory days, in the late 40s or in the 1950s, and you were staying, say, at Grossinger's or Concord, one of the big hotels, what might a typical day and typical night have been like?
Well, first of all, you would obey the Grossinger's law, which is that you shall not draw an unorganized breath. From the time you get up in the morning, your day is fixed. You would be expected to attend three meals dressed differently for each meal. You would then probably be entertained on the lawn in the morning. You might play tennis. You might just watch people playing tennis. You might swim. You would have a bathing suit for that. You would certainly have another bathing suit for your afternoon dip. You would have another outfit for your lunch. You would have another outfit for your supper. You would have another outfit for dancing afterwards. You would have another outfit probably for attending the theater, watching the Tummler, or watching a little vest pocket musical. You would probably have a canoeing outfit or a rowboat outfit for your evening relaxation on the lake. And then you'd come back, and because you'd only had three meals with about 500 choices of things, you would retire to your room where you would probably have salamis hanging like stalactites from the ceiling. Most people did.
Describe what the Tummler did at the hotel.
The Tummler would start in the morning by kidding you at breakfast and follow you throughout the day. The Tummler had about 6 hours sleep. The rest of the time he was on. He only knew two states, on and off, like a light bulb. And when he was off, he was asleep. When he was on, he was making sure that couples were constantly changing until they found the right guy or the right girl. He told jokes while you were waiting in line, perhaps for food or waiting to get a rowboat, or when you were doing calisthenics, which he would usually lead. He would tell jokes or stories of one sort or another, usually success stories about a couple whom you just missed last week who met and got married. He a doctor, she an heiress. You know. Always. They were always you just missed those people. That was the success stories. And then at night, he entertained professionally. He was the MC. Sometimes he starred in the musical. Sometimes he had the lead. Sometimes he had the comic role. And at night, sometimes, like Danny Kaye, he entertained in headlights. They turned the cars into a semicircle, and he would entertain in the headlights if there was no nightlights for them.
The Tummler was like the social director, the entertainment director. What does the word Tummler mean?
The word Tummler means what it sounds like. It's a man who creates a tumult. That is to say, he makes sure that no one is ever relaxed in his presence.
One of the things the Tummler did at all of the Catskill resorts was to lead, Simon Says, usually by the pool or in the lobby. Do you have any idea how this Simon Says institution got started in the Catskills?
Most people feel that what happened was it began as a children's game and then it became a romance game. That is to say, you would do, I think everybody knows what Simon Says is, you just move according to the instructor, and if he doesn't say Simon Says and he says, do this, and you do it, you're out. And he would try to arrange it in one way or another so that in the end, one couple was left on the floor. And then he would say, Simon Says, hug. They would hug, and that was the beginning of many romances. I think that's the way it really began. And the Tummlers, it was a very easy thing for most Tummlers to do. You didn't have to be funny. You just had to get people to move their arms and move their legs. It was a combination of calisthenics and gags. And from there, they moved to telling jokes during the middle of, there's a celebrated Tummler in in Grossinger's, who used to tell jokes right in the middle. He would say, do this, do that. A lady asks me about sex. I say, sex, it's a good department store. You know, he'd do those kind of lines in the middle of his routines. And sometimes they worked very well, and sometimes they didn't. In the end, I think, just as in the game itself, there was only one Simon Says game left in the Catskills, and that was indeed at Grossinger's. And now Grossinger's is out of business.
Now, one of the legacies of the Catskill resorts is the comics. I mean, so many comics came up through the ranks of the Catskill clubs.
Well, there was no minor leagues, you know, in the days of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. There were no minor leagues except the Catskills and smaller nightclubs. And in the Catskills, you had the freedom to fail. Joan Rivers said the Catskill audiences were the worst in the world, the hardest on her. She used to say that she would appear at some resorts where they spoke only Yiddish. She spoke only English. So a translator would come in, and she said every line bombed twice. But nevertheless, she learned. She got tough because of it, and Buddy Hackett learned that way, and Alan King learned that way. The most famous of the Tumblers who made it big was Danny Kaye, who started in a little resort called White Row, and the next thing you know, he was offered an MGM contract. And Jerry Lewis started as really a kid. I think he was 15 or 16 years old at Brown's. And Sid Caesar, who really sponsored a great many humorists, like Woody Allen, who wrote for him, and Mel Brooks, they all began in the Catskills. And they probably hated it, and they certainly never went back, but it taught them what they knew. It taught them an awful lot about timing. Jackie Mason learned everything he knew about timing.
There was a whole subculture of the waiters and busboys at the hotels, and even if you only know the Catskills through Dirty Dancing, you will have picked up on that. How did the waiters end up being the young single guys?
There was never enough single men. There never have been enough single men at any resort anywhere in the world. And so what they used to do, the owners would do, is get waiters, and they would screen them pretty carefully too, who were in college, so that they were presented as, this young man will be a lawyer next year. This young man is going to be a doctor someday. And so the girls would come up, even though these were only waiters, they had somebody to dance with and somebody who has had a future. And for many people, if you really realize how many of the customers were immigrants or the sons and daughters of immigrants, this was the only way they could move socially. They were from Lower East Side background, not very much money, socially at the bottom of the, you know, the American ladder. And they could marry up, or they could marry somebody who was going up because he was a professional. It was very, very important to have that kind of status. And so all of these waiters and busboys represented a kind of a key to the door, a way out into America, and it worked. It wasn't just a promise. That's why there's really no Borscht Belt anymore, is because people married out of the Borscht Belt and went to college out of the Borscht Belt and traded up from the Borscht Belt.
As a resort area, the Catskills have changed immensely in the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. What were some of the reasons for a lot of the hotels and country clubs closing up?
Well, I've traced it to a few things. One, I think you may doubt this, but it really is true, the invention of the air conditioner. Because it meant that summers were not as insupportable. You could stay in the Bronx in July and you wouldn't die, whereas formerly you thought you would. You thought you'd just melt and run down into a sewer. And the other thing is really much deeper and more important, and that is success is what undid the Catskills. For one thing, anti-Semitism subsided. For another, people were able to afford more expensive vacations. You could go to Europe. You could go to Florida. You could even go to Israel. And gradually, the Catskills began to be perceived as something your grandparents or your parents did. You didn't want to do that. So the Catskills is really undone by success. It is very much an American story of assimilation and integration into American life.
Mm-hmm. When it was clear that the clientele wasn't coming like they used to the Catskill resorts, what are some of the changes that the owners made to try to attract more customers?
There are two things I could tell you about. One was, of course, Italian night, which is always shocking to me. I mean, the idea that they would have Polish and polka nights and other things. But one of the things that sort of surprised me, I went to the Concord doing some research on the book, and the first thing I saw, and this is the Concord has a place that has a synagogue built right within it, and I went inside, and there on sort of a black felt sign, you know, with the movable white letters, it said, welcome Blue Shield Blue Cross. And that, to me, said it all. I mean, these are now resorts that cater largely to conventions of businessmen and sales forces and the like. So that's what they've tried to do. They've tried to make it a convention business, no longer the simple Jewish nuclear family. They can't make it simply on that, the few that are still surviving.
So if you go to the Catskill resorts now, what else are you going to see?
You'll see ethnics of one sort or another. You will see Hasids. You will see blacks. You will see Hispanics. You'll see a very different kind of resort. This isn't to say that there are no Jews up there. The Jews have settled in the towns. You'll see Jewish police chiefs and Jewish firemen and Jewish store owners and administrators of all kinds. But you're not ever going to see, I think, the old kind of Jewish resort again, because those people, except perhaps for the influx of Russian Jews that are coming to the United States now, those people are gone. They're into American life.
Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Kanfer is the author of A Summer World. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux.